You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Alquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Welcome once again to Inspire Excellence. Tommy Alquist, Kevin Miller here. And Tommy, a very special program with three very special people that make a difference here in the Treasure Valley.
Absolutely, Kevin. We talked about who we wanted to bring on, and we want to highlight people that make a difference, people that inspire. And I think for both of us, immediately, we came up with these three. So thank you very much for being here today. It's literally our honor and pleasure. This episode will air the week before Christmas, and I think everyone is a little more in the giving mood, a little more cheery right now, and hopefully you're seeing that in your organizations. But what we want to talk about today is, what about the rest of the year? You know, I think that there's a growing disparity between those who have and those who don't have. And even though for many of us, you know, times are booming and things are great, it's not for a lot of people. And we have with us today three guests that I'm sure you're going to introduce, Kevin, that clearly have dedicated their lives to taking care of those who need it most. So with that, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, Tommy, and, you know, the idea of working to make people better, it's just the idea of these folks dedicating themselves. They're talking about profits and profitability, but also improving human capital.
It's the ultimate service, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about what makes Idaho, Idaho. And I think really high on the list for me are the people that give back here. And there are just story after story after story of people that dedicate themselves to others. And you are the source of those stories because you inspire others to give and you create the framework so that that can be delivered to people. And so God bless you for being here. And I can't wait to talk about the issues that you face every day.
And joining us, Nora Carpenter from the United Way, Reverend Bill Roscoe from the Boise Rescue Mission, Colleen Braga from the Boys and Girls Club. And why don't we start, Colleen, with you, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Yes, well, thank you, first and foremost, for inviting me to be here today. I am the executive director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Ada County. We've been around the Valley for 21 years, and we have grown pretty exponentially just even in the last couple of years, but we have five sites through Ada County. We started out in Garden City, serving kids in the trailer park area there, and that was just the community that came forward, realized they had a problem with kids with nothing to do and getting in trouble, and so anyway, Mayor Ted Ellis at the time, who's passed away since, had the inspiration to get a Boys and Girls Club started in Garden City. And within a year of the club opening, nothing else had happened in the community except that juvenile crime had been reduced by close to 30%. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not that the kids that we serve are bad kids. It's just that any kid without something, you know, positive to do in the after school hours is potentially trouble. So, you know, Meridian Mayor had the wisdom to see the need in her community as well. So a couple of years later, we opened the Meridian Boys and Girls Club. We opened another site in CUNA about 10 years ago, just for summer. And then just recently in the last year, we opened another site at Peregrine in Meridian. Meridian, you build it and they'll come. And we found that out. Tommy just helped us not too long ago with the capital campaign to expand that facility. And you know, you open it and it immediately fills. So about 3,800 kids as registered members, most of them low income. Most of them would be latchkey kids without the clubs. So we're happy to be serving and we do it with the help of the community.
Reverend Bill?
Well, Kevin, that was great to hear about the Boys and Girls Club. I'm the CEO of the Boise Rescue Mission. And you and I, of course, go back a long way and have a long history together. I've been in the Valley 16 years now, and I have a sign on my desk that says, I wasn't born in Idaho, but I got here as fast as I could. And I really mean that. My whole family's here now, except for one son who ran off to North Carolina. But we love it here. I love it here. I love this valley and the wonderful people of the valley. I started in rescue mission work about 25 years ago. I was a building contractor prior to that. And I didn't have the success that Tommy Alquist has had, so I was kind of looking around for something better, and God brought me to the rescue mission, and here I am all these years later doing this. Rescue mission was started 60 years ago. So we just had our anniversary in October, had a great celebration. A lot of folks came and enjoyed that time with us. When I came, we had a mission downtown Boise on Front Street, and we had the City Light Home for Women and Children had just opened in 2001, and the Lighthouse Rescue Mission was on the boulevard there in Nampa, and it was opened in 2001 as well. Today, we have four 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week facilities. We have the new mission in Boise, the River of Life on River and 13th, and we have the existing City Light Home for Women and Children. And then in Nampa, we have a new lighthouse, which is now on 16th Avenue in Nampa, and the Valley Women and Children Shelter, which is off of Midland on Corporate Lane. And along with that, we have some transitional apartments and a thrift store in Nampa and the Ministry Center warehouse over in Boise on 24th Street. So we've got quite a bit of growth over these 15, 16 years and serving a lot of people. Right now, about 490, I think, in bed every night, men, women, and children. And 43% of those overnight guests are women and children. And every day, there's constantly between 50 and 65 children sleeping in our beds in our facilities, our two women and children's facilities, which is pretty remarkable. That's a pretty high count for a community like this one, size of this one. And we serve about 1,000 meals a day. So our dining rooms are open to everyone, whether they're homeless and staying with us or staying at Sanctuary Shelter, or whether they're just people in the neighborhood that can have a benefit of a free meal. So we serve a lot of meals and enjoy serving a lot of people in the most generous community on the face of the earth.
Thank you. Nora?
Well, it is a joy to be here. Nora Carpenter, President and CEO of United Way of Treasure Valley, and I feel like I am having a Live United moment here. Just being in the company of very caring leaders, advocates, community leaders who are leading organizations that make an impact every day is sort of the definition of United Way. Our job is to wake up every single day and think about the resources that exist in our community and uniting them around neighborhoods of opportunity where families perhaps are ready for a little stability, whether they need a temporary home to stay in or longer term support where their kids are safe after school, where they have quality supports so that mom and dad can continue to work. All of us together in this room and everyone listening to this is really part of helping our community come together and bring the resources, financial, time, talent, knowledge together. And that's what United Way does. So 30 years for Boys and Girls Club, 60 years for the Boise Rescue Mission, 90 years for United Way. We have a lovely math thing going on here. So 2018 is United Way of Treasure Valley's 90th anniversary, well over 100 years for the United Way brand. And I love to tell the story of how United Way was founded. First of all, because we were founded in the West, Denver, Colorado, which I feel like we're kind of a real Western sort of deal, but also because the story is like the tee up to a really bad bar joke. So a priest, a rabbi, and a little old lady, true story, get together in Denver, Colorado, and at the time, they were serving what we would refer to as orphans and downtrodden, all those terms that we don't use anymore, but they realized that they were all serving the same families and doing it exactly the same way. And that wasn't a great use of resources. So these three very brilliant, kind, caring people said, what if we work together? What if we serve these families together? And each one of our organizations or our groups brought what we're very best at instead of trying to duplicate. And that's how United Way was born. And today, across the footprint in Idaho, every community has the benefit of a United Way resource. Ours is fortunate to serve the majority of the population of the state, all of the greater Treasure Valley. So it is our delight, and we get to work with amazing people, caring organizations, and spend every single day thinking about how to combine the very best resources in our community to lift forever.
Boy, that is inspiring. I don't know if we could go on with that. Tommy, you know, you've worked privately with these folks in making a difference. When you see the reaction of people that have had that helping, not a handout, but a hand up, your thoughts?
Well, I'm just sitting here, and as you're all talking, I, as you see what happens in the Boys and Girls Club, right? You, with your own eyes, you tour the rescue mission, Reverend Bill, And then Nora, as a former board member, you see exactly what happens with those United Way dollars and impact that it has. And you look at what you do for in all of your programs that each of you do. There are statistics, and I'm sure we'll probably hit a few of those today. You know, homelessness, right? Poverty, ALICE. I mean, the thing that Nora, you'll probably speak a little bit to this, but asset limited, income constrained, but employed, the working poor, those people that are one paycheck away from being homeless or sleeping in a car or couch surfing as a teenager, all that goes on. But before we get into that, can I do one thing? Can each of you think, just in the last couple of weeks, you probably won't have to go farther than that. Can you tell us just a brief story of an individual? Because I think for people listening at home, there's numbers, there's, hey, it's, you know, it's the holidays. Let's go, you know, let's go take Kevin a turkey. Let's go see the turkey suit.
Right.
Yes. You know, or let's go do something. But there are individuals that it's, Kevin, I love what you said. It's not, it's a hand up, right? It's how do you get them a hand up and show them a better way? Can each of you give just a brief story from the last couple of weeks, because I know you have them, of someone that your organization has given that hand up to before we get rolling?
Helen? Well, I can take that one. There was a boy who attends our Meridian Club. And anyway, I've known him and I've seen him around the club, and he just seems, you know, like any normal kid that you would ever come across. He's about 14. And anyway, I just learned that when he was younger, his parents were separated. He lived with mom somewhere in eastern Idaho, and she had some mental health problems. And as a result, she raised him. She never let him out of the house, really. He never went to school. He never learned, you know. She was a drug addict, and he, you know, had to deal with a lot of that. But at some point in time, Dad ended up getting custody. And so this boy, you know, the dad headed to his home in Meridian. And one of the first things he realized is this boy had no interaction with other kids. Not only was he, you know, not able to join his peers in school, but he lacked social interaction. So anyway, one of the first things the dad did was bring him over to the Meridian Boys and Girls Club. And anyway, you know, he was very fortunate that the boy's stepmom, you know, spent a lot of time getting him caught up and, you know, really tried to accelerate that process. But bringing him to the club where there was a lot of acceptance, you know, that's the culture there, accepting people for their differences and, you know, being able to make friends there and socialize. Within a very short time, he was getting, you know, he's pretty much got up to speed in school. But socially, you would never guess that was his beginning. And so mom and dad are so grateful that, you know, they had a place like the club that they could bring him there, because school, you know, has that kind of opportunity, but, you know, it's in a limited quantity. And so bringing him to the club in the after school hours where he could just be, you know, just there and in a very socially rich environment was just a blessing for him. So
this morning I was over at the River Street Rescue Mission, and I was able to meet one of our veterans in our Veterans Transitional Living Program. And he's a young man. I don't know exactly how old he is. I'll guess he's probably in his early 30s. He served in the Marine Corps for 4 years, had a 4-year enlistment, honorably discharged, served in Okinawa and Japan and back in the States. And when he came out of the Marine Corps, he, as he put it, he just kind of started making bad decisions and found himself addicted to alcohol and ultimately living on the streets in Boise. And he's a really bright young guy and a great smile and a great personality. But he banged around on the streets in Boise for a couple of years, and things were going from bad to worse, as they typically do, you know, when you get into that kind of lifestyle. And he had a few brushes with the law, and those kinds of problems were happening. Distanced himself from his family and friends, and he started staying at the rescue mission. He was staying at Sanctuary and Rescue Mission because of the policies we have. You can't just come and stay if you don't try to improve yourself, you know. You've got to make an effort to get out of homelessness, and the Sanctuary has the same kind of thing going on. So he would stay with us until his time ran out, and then he'd stay at Sanctuary, and he'd stay with us, and he'd stay at Sanctuary. And finally, one day, he decided that he would look into our Veterans Transitional Living Program and did. And they welcomed him in and he signed on, and he's got about 2.5 or 3 months there now sober. He's very involved in his own recovery. He's doing intensive outpatient with VA, and he's in our recovery program at the Rescue Mission, and of course staying upstairs with all the veterans on the third floor. And the kid is just such a nice young man, and polite and smart and happy. And he talked about the change that's happened, and it all started, he said, it all started when I was able to ask for help. And he said, that's a common thing with us veterans, is we don't want to ask anybody for help. And how true is that? Which is why we have so many tragic suicides amongst veterans today. But he said, it all started when he decided to ask for help. And he asked for help. And then he said, and you people welcomed me in. What a great feeling that gave me to hear that from him. And now he's signed up at VSU, and he'll be starting classes next semester. I mentioned he's doing outpatient at VA. He goes to Celebrate Recovery. He's been involved in a church, and as he said, he's rediscovered his faith in God. And I mean, this kid's got it going on, and it just really fired me up to meet him and hear that story. And there's a lot of those stories. As you asked the question and I'm listening, I'm thinking, which story do I have to tell this morning, this afternoon? There's so many. It's such a great, great thing to be a part of, change lives like this.
That is one of the great joys that we all have the benefit of, is the Rolodex of moments and stories. And sometimes, Reverend Bill, it is hard to pull out one. So I'd like to introduce you to Marco. Marco's a first grader in Canyon County. And one of United Way's specialties, as I mentioned earlier, is bringing together sometimes really unlikely community resources. And Marco's story is that moment. So this story, Tommy, you asked for a couple of weeks ago. This one actually was a little bit farther back, but not much. Right around Halloween, United Way helped one of our community schools, a school where lots of resources come close to a neighborhood of need and use a school as the home base, helped one of our schools have a healthy trunk or treat, which seems like a complete irony. Aren't you just supposed to trunk or treat for candy? Well, that's not the way United Way rolls. So we had an entire parking lot of a school filled with unlikely partners. We had health clinics, health providers, hospital providers, University of Idaho, College of Western Idaho, friends from Simplot were there with STEM activities. Public television was there with some of their characters. You could trunk or treat for books. A neighborhood church is hosting a community garden, and they had all the bounty from the garden. One of their parishioners grew an entire pumpkin patch just so that the kids at this school could have their very own pumpkin. Well, back to Marco. So Marco lives very close. Marco's in first grade. Marco doesn't have a parent who is able to be with him during the day because his parents are shift workers, as many of our Idaho families are. So little Marco, with his plastic pumpkin, marched himself to the school at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning for trunk or treat, dressed in his little Power Ranger suit that was not really his size, but by golly, it's what he had, so it's what he wore, and he participated in different events. And I just happened to saddle up to St. Alphonsus's health station, which, believe it or not, had a line of parents and family members of all different sizes for the ear washing station. Trick! For the trick-or-treat part of this thing. And here's little Marco, and I'm pretty sure in hindsight that he got in line because there was a line. And that's just what you do when you're trunk-or-treating. But nonetheless, the reason that in addition to flu shots and glucose testing and vital signs, at a trunk or treat, the principal had specifically asked for an ear cleaning station because kids living in poverty frequently don't have access to the hygiene that helps them be just sanitary, to have the regular kind of hygiene that we all take for granted. And he had said to us, I'm pretty sure that some of our kids are underperforming, not because they're not smart, but because they can't hear. Mm-hmm. Is there any way we could get some kiddos' ears washed out? Well, little Marco standing in line, and it gets to be his turn, and maybe because it was Halloween and ear goop is appropriately disgusting, he just sat himself down, and I just happened to be standing there when the medical technician peeked in his ear, and I heard her say to him, okay, we've got a little work to do here. So they put the little drape around his costume and a little like bucket thingy under his ear, and she irrigated his ear, and sure enough, it was all kinds of Halloween yuck. And a moment later, I watched little Marco stand up and just freeze. And his eyes got huge. And he just looked around and he said, I can hear. I can hear. He just needed that thing at that time. And when the resources of our community can come together at a place and a time where families can access them so that they don't have to rely on transportation, when they don't have to worry about their busy schedule, but the resources that these magical people in this room help provide and others, when we think about how to do it differently, there's little Marcos out there, there's veterans out there, there's thousands of young people whose circumstances are not their fault, but when we all come together, we can have a little Marco moment. It can be that I can hear. I'll be able to understand and do my homework and follow instructions in the classroom. So the end of the story is a few minutes later, little Marco's first kindergarten and first grade classes, each class grade had a spooky fun run, part of the healthy trunk or treat. And juvenile detention had worked with us to rehabilitate a bunch of bicycles, a lot of bicycles. And a local Rotary Club had tuned him up and spiffed him up. And little Marco won his race and walked himself in and rode himself home on a shiny new bicycle.
Well, that is amazing, Tommy, when you think of right here in the Treasure Valley, these works going on all the time. And this is what should be on the front page of the paper. This should be what people are talking about.
Yeah. So transitioning then, let me ask you, the next question is, for those that are listening to this today, I love this time of year because it's a little easier to find ways to make a difference. Everyone's busy and everyone gets their head down in their own lives and taking, you know, those that have the resources to help, but sometimes you just don't know how. Can you just touch a little bit on for each of your organizations? What are the things throughout the year, both with volunteerism and with financial resources? How can you make a difference throughout the year? And give some suggestions out there to the good people that are saying, what more could I do?
Well, I'll start with that one, and I'll say this. If you have a gift or a talent or a skill and you need a place to share that, we can help you at the Boise Rescue Mission. Because with the variety of people that we serve and the variety of programs that we offer, we have a lot of volunteer opportunities. And so we need people that can drive a van. We need people that can tutor children and adults with academics. We need people that can help in the kitchen. We need people that'll serve in the warehouse. We've these great big cardboard totes full of shoes that people have donated. And unfortunately, people rarely tie the shoes together or connect them. And so we have this tote full of shoes. And the kids love this one because they can dive into the tote and they can toss shoes out. The kids outside find them and put them together. But matching up shoes is a big deal. Sorting through all the donated food and putting the peas and carrots where they belong and the pickles and the onions where they belong. There's lots of sorting of food that goes on in our warehouse every single day. We need people that can teach recovery because we have a residential drug and alcohol recovery program. So people that have the KDAC certification or something like that, or even life experience of recovery and want to share their experience and help people understand the process, we need that help too. And then for a long time, we had a lady who was almost 90 years old, and she would ride the bus from her house in Garden City up to the bus stop by 24th Street in Boise, and then walk that half a block to our building. And this was rain, snow, sleet, or hail. And she showed up on a particular day every day, and she spent the whole day there, and we fed her lunch. And she shredded documents that needed to be shredded, that we couldn't throw them out without shredding them, and we didn't want to hold them until the free shred day came. And she would just sit up there and shred documents and tell stories of 90 years ago when she grew up in this valley and what life was like riding a horse and all those kinds of things. So simple office tasks, complex office tasks, anything to do with serving meals and preparing meals, tutoring, mentoring, driving a van. If you can do that, if you can mow the lawn, if you can run a chainsaw, anything, if you can sling a paintbrush, we have a place for you. And we love our volunteers. We have a lot of them, and we love them and appreciate them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, I love this time of year because it is a natural time where people are thinking of giving and supporting organizations that they believe in and all that. But the truth of the matter, and you guys know this too, is need is all year long. You know, the same people that you're helping now will need help in January.
That's right.
So, you know, it's really important to keep that in mind. For the Boys and Girls Club, pretty much any day after school from 3 to 8, we welcome volunteers. Whether, you know, anything that you can imagine with kids, from homework help and tutoring every day after school, to doing arts and crafts projects, to technology programs, coaching our sports leagues. We offer free sports, team sports to kids, and we need coaches, volunteer coaches. We also serve meals every day at all of our sites, and we would love to have people not only come and help serve and maybe bus tables, but sit down and have a meal with a kid. There is nothing more impactful than sitting down. You know, kids, they typically want to sit down and gobble down a meal so they can go in the gym and play basketball or something. But if you have an adult there giving them attention and giving them their time, they'll sit there and eat their whole meal, whether it's broccoli or hummus, you know, whatever. But just that interaction is what they really crave. Mm-hmm. And that's, when homework help and tutoring, you would think, you know, every kids participate on a voluntary basis, so we don't force them to go and do their homework. Mom and dad would like that, but that's not the way we roll. So anyway, the kids have to voluntarily go in there. And I'll tell you, that room is filled up every day, every single seat filled up with kids doing their homework. And the reason is, adults that have come there to help tutor it and give their time. So it's very, give your time to a kid and you will see, you know, the impact that it makes. So we would love to have volunteers. Anybody listening?
I love the idea of volunteering. And as this room knows, and maybe some of our listeners know, Idaho ranks right at the top of our 50 states for volunteer hours. We are an extraordinarily giving community. And yet almost every single day I hear somebody say, gee, I'd like to volunteer, but I don't really know how or where or who needs me. And so I guess I would say, pick up the phone, go to the internet, look around, ask your friends and neighbors. The awesome thing about volunteering is it's like speed dating. You can kind of just give it a try. You don't have to go to the prom right away, and you don't have to get married. You can just sort of try it out. You can see if animals is your passion, or arts, or kids, or whatever it happens to be. And don't be intimidated by thinking you don't have a skill or a talent.
Yeah.
Every one of us does, whether it's sitting with another human being in a care center, or reading to a child, or listening to a child read to you, whether it's mowing the lawn, there is something for you. So don't feel like you have to build a resume and then decide, you know, what your skill section's going to look like. Just know that the fact that you care is the only skill that is the get you in the door. Mm-hmm. And so just go do it. That's all I can say is go do it.
That's, one of the concepts. Someone I consider one of my main life mentors, probably about 16 or 17 years ago, I was sitting with him, and it's just one of those guys you wanted to be like, right? Kind of like this guy.
That's right.
No, I'm serious. I mean, just one of those guys that do, right?
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, you know, what's your secret? You're always doing something for someone. And he said, the secret is I don't ask. And you think about that. How many people do you know that say, hey, what can I do for you? Mm-hmm. Hey, let me know if there's, Nora, if there's ever anything I can do for you, let me know. And he said, I stopped asking. And I would, he's a very, very thoughtful, you know, God-fearing gentleman who loved to just pray every day of, Lord, show me a need, and I'm just going to go do. Mm-hmm. And what a great lesson. So every time since then, I'm not great at it, Kevin, but when you see, hey, there's a need there, don't ask, right? Don't ask, what can I do for you? Go do something. And it may be something small, but those are the little gems that come in your life too, where you learn something or you grow. So anyway, Kevin, what other thoughts you have?
Well, you know, I'm very positive about all the people moving into the
the Treasure Valley, unlike my friend Tommy here. And
he's going to go into his Clint Eastwood get off my lawn routine.
Right. But one question we would have is, how has the amount of people moving into the Treasure Valley impacted your organizations? So, Nora, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, certainly from United Way's perspective, it has created an interesting education opportunity and an interesting bringing their life skill and their perspective to our community. So it's been a little bit of a two-way street for us. We probably have more fresh volunteering activities going on than we ever have before, and a lot of it is folks who are new to the community and want to learn. They really are taking their new residency seriously, and they want to get their fingers into the fabric of the community, first by understanding the needs and the opportunities and the context. But many of them are coming from larger metropolitan cities that where they have seen need in a perhaps a more visible way than we experience it here. Many of the families that we all know who are in need or even in crisis are not visible necessarily. They are behind the scenes, behind a curtain, if you will, a little bit. We know that they need help, but they're not literally the ones necessarily standing on street corners, where in some major metropolitan areas you may see poverty, for example, much more visibly. And so it's lovely to get to talk to somebody who says, I'm not seeing the need, but I suspect there is one. How can I best help? And be able to educate them. And then it's also because we're a national brand, much like Boys and Girls Club is, people say, I've had some United Way experience. I volunteered with my United Way, or I was involved in some activity. Can I help here as well? So we get the benefit a bit of being a national brand. The interesting challenge for us in this community is some of the complexities of need now are different because we are growing. So just the fact that we're growing has created a housing crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's virtually no inventory at any price point to speak of, let alone affordable housing. So that growth has started to create an interesting complexity for us.
And that's the first thing that I thought about was the housing shortage. We work really hard with people to help them get out of homelessness and get back into independent living, and have had great success in doing that. But lately, and over the past year particularly, finding that first rental unit after staying in a shelter and having those credit history problems and maybe a brush or two with a misdemeanor, it's really, really hard for people with that background to break into the housing market. Even with a voucher, and I mentioned our veteran a little earlier, I've got veterans up there in our program who have had the HUD-VASH voucher. It's a HUD and VA together providing a housing voucher like Section 8. And they last for 90 or 120 days, and then you have to renew them. They're all having to get them renewed because in the course of time, they can't find an apartment or a house to rent with their voucher in their hand and maybe a little income to go along with that. So the housing crunch has really become very, very, very prominent in this community with the growth that we've had. And there is zero vacancies, as you all know. It's less than 1%. So that's an issue.
Has there been good, though?
Pardon me?
Yeah. How about the good, yes.
On the good side. Yes, on the other hand, right. On the other hand, there are a lot of people moving in who are coming here with wealth, you know, with the means to support a nonprofit such as ours. And so we're getting new donors, and we're having a good outcome right now to our holiday donor acquisition campaign. We're seeing a higher response than we've seen in the recent past. That's a great thing. And then once people make a gift to the mission, of course, we're going to try to develop a relationship with that donor and hopefully keep them involved with us. And they might volunteer, but perhaps they'll give another gift and another gift, and they'll become a regular donor to the mission. So we're optimistic in that regard, because there are a lot of people, apparently, that we're reaching with our acquisition efforts who are supporting the rescue mission for the first time. So hopefully that will grow, and we'll make that budget happen this year.
Yeah, we've been experiencing, very similar things at the Boys and Girls Club with new donors coming in and supporting, our mission and all that, which has been wonderful because, I think there is an influx of you know, retirees, and there's an influx of people who are moving to have a better life for their families. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people here, you know, and it's very much the population you talk of, the ALICE, you know, in the people who are working, you know, basically the working poor. And so anyway, I see that population growing mm-hmm. even more so than the retirees. And as that population continues to expand, you know, we're being asked to open up new sites. We have contacts from schools saying, how do we get a Boys and Girls Club here? And so right now with the economy, you know, it gives us a lot of optimism that, you know, maybe we can continue expanding our mission because it has to happen. I mean, I think a lot of people move here from places where they, you know, there is a lot more infrastructure there as far as, you know, support systems and all that. And you know, when they come here, you know, they need to find those things because it's the quality of our community and what our future is going to look like. Later, if we put all the time and effort into building that now. So, you know, I agree with Reverend Roscoe. You know, we've seen an uptick in support for our organization. We're hoping that it continues and the economy continues to move in a positive direction so we continue in that cycle.
We're getting close to wrapping up, but can I sneak in one more question? I think a lot of people tuning in want to learn something. Is there a statistic, and you don't have to have one, but is there a statistic out there that people will leave this podcast with today saying, I didn't know that, and I live here? Is there something that you can throw out there from, and again, there may or may not be, but is there something out there to educate someone on today, maybe for later follow-up, but that just would go, wow, I didn't know that?
I'll take that one. So today, there are about 4,500 students in schools across the Greater Treasure Valley who will leave school today and not know what home will be. So 4,500-ish, if the number floats on a day-to-day basis, but it tends to hover really close, 4,500 homeless students in the Treasure Valley. They rely on school for warmth, food, stability, and then they leave, and they may be staying in a shelter. They may be in a car, a camper. It's interesting that increasingly we're hearing about utility trailers being converted into multifamily units. So there's no heat. This is wintertime now. No real ability to cook. So school really becomes their safe haven. And to Colleen's point, the need won't go away just because it's no longer Christmas. It will continue. So that's my wow statistic, is it's very invisible.
Wow.
Well, I'll throw you one from the other perspective. And the good news is that every year, for this being the fifth year, we have seen over 500 people come through the Rescue Mission front door homeless with a lot of question about the future and leave the Rescue Mission into their own place to live again. So that's a pretty stunning number when you multiply it by five and you think, what would we look like in our valley with 2,500 people not having had that opportunity, and where would they be today? So we're very pleased about that. The bad news is they keep coming through the front door and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. But nonetheless, for those 500 or 600 people over the last 5 years, every year, who've made that transition, we see a very small recidivism rate, very small, 10 or 15% at most. It's a remarkable thing. So, and it goes back to the community being so generous and helping us to do what we do, not taking government money. We're dependent on this community, and we appreciate them.
Colleen, anything you'd like to add?
I was trying to think of a local statistic, and nothing is popping in my head, except I do have a statistic of a recent Harris Poll survey of Boys and Girls Club alumni, and it just kind of brought back to me, as if I don't live it every day, why it's so important that we do what we do at the club. But 57% of those surveyed said that the Boys and Girls Club saved their life. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the Boys and Girls Club changed my life. It was they saved my life. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the club in my neighborhood, I don't know where I'd be. I don't think I would be alive. So anyway, I just have to share that because
it's a beautiful thing. That is amazing. So we'll stick with you, Ed, briefly. What inspires you?
What inspires me is the knowledge and belief that what I'm doing every day is making a difference, not only in the lives of kids now, but in the future.
And if people want information, what can they do?
Go to our website, adaclubs.org. You can learn about everything that we offer there for kids, and you can learn how to support.
Adaclubs.org. Reverend Bill,
I'm greatly inspired. I'm inspired by you, Kevin Miller, and you, Tommy Alquist, and these folks to my left and right. And honestly, this community inspires me. The generosity, the compassion, and the concern that I see every single day at our rescue mission from this community really inspires me. So I've got inspiration from God who tells me I should do this, and it has value and meaning. I have inspiration from the community, and then I have the inspiration of seeing guys like that young veteran that I met this morning and seeing a life changed, a positive course in life being set. That jacks me up.
And your website, sir?
BoiseRM.org.
BoiseRM.org. Nora?
I am inspired by all of you, by the folks that are listening, but I am mostly inspired by the word yes. I'm inspired every time somebody says yes to the opportunity to help another person. You can reach United Way, taking a cue from Kevin's luck, UnitedWayTV.org, UnitedWayTV, like Treasure Valley.org.
Thank you all. Thank you. Tommy, your thoughts, final thoughts?
You know, this episode's on giving, and I think we'd all be remiss if we didn't honor this guy right here.
Indeed.
I mean, I think of everyone I know around the state now, there's a lot of people. Guys that are top five, top three that inspire me, and that's Kevin Miller. Just came off Kevin Miller's mission. This guy never stops giving. I kidded him a couple years ago at the Seven Cares Day. I said, you're the first in, last out. So, I mean, at the end of this episode, Kevin, I just want to tell you thank you for personally inspiring me for a long time and everyone else that knows you. It's genuine. You're one of those guys that just gets it done for people, and I just hope you know how much you inspire all of us. So.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
And we urge everyone to strive for excellence.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.